Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming tonight. What we just chanted, the words say, the Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle. Infinitely subtle. That's what I want to talk about tonight, this infinite subtlety. Now we see it, hear it. And speaking of hearing it, do you hear that? It was here before we arrived. It may be here after we go. What is it? Where does it begin? Where does it end? What is its form? What are its limits? So, I don't know. I really don't know what it is. That's what Seizan and I were trying to figure out when we came in tonight. It's a sound. It sounds like it's connected to a machine. And the machine's probably connected to a human being who's working it, or who designed it, or who built it, and it would be connected to the parents of the person who designed it or built it or is working it, and to, you know, generations of people who built the street on which, Crosby Street, on which that machinery and that labor are manifesting. And that street is connected to the all of the labor that went into the founding of this city, the clearing of this island. It's connected to the future generations of people who will live on Crosby Street, or might be related to the machine operator, or the people who tear down Crosby Street at some point to put up another tower. Where does it end? Where does it begin? Infinitely subtle. So, how about your life? What is it? Where does it begin? Where does it end? What are the limits? I've been having kind of a heavy-duty week. A lot of pressure at work, one thing after another. Still have various things I have to accomplish later tonight, tomorrow, this weekend. Maybe it will clear a little after the weekend. Falling behind on things. A little bit of a headache at the end of the day today. A friend of mine marked the year anniversary since his partner died a couple days ago. This weekend, a couple of Sangha members are going to be getting married. One relationship of decades came to an end a year ago. Another relationship that's been going on for a while is going to be consecrated this weekend. What about in your life? What's happening? What are the challenges that you're facing right now? What are they? in the perspective of the infinitely subtle, what are they? How do you see them or engage with them? How can you practice with them? Some years ago, we did a retreat at Village Zendo, and Roshi gave us a study text called the Avasamtaka Sutra, which in English is called the Flower Ornament Sutra or the Flower Garland Sutra. And she gave us just a sliver of it to read and study. But I got the book. The book is like this. And it's got really, really, really thin paper. And so I'm somewhere in the middle. And I don't think it will ever end. It's a representation of the Dharma. And I think it will never end. I'm an impatient reader. I like to get through books and check off, you know? And then what's next on the book, on the shelf there. But this one I've given up on. I realize I'm never going to finish. The print is really small, too. Avatamsaka Sutra is a very old text. It's considered one of the great, most sublime teachings in our Mahayana tradition. It was probably being compiled in the first few centuries of the current era. Maybe around 400 it came together in Central Asia, in early Chinese language. And it went on, it became the basis for the philosophy, the Wayan philosophy, which is kind of a very profound, deep, complex, and esoteric philosophical tradition in Mahayana Buddhism, carried into Japan and is the basis for the Keigon school in Japan, which is an esoteric, very, very old, pre-Zen esoteric tradition, Mahayana Buddhist tradition in Japan. But because of those deep roots, it also filtered into Zen teaching, and there's it shaped some of the discourse and language that we have in Zen, and it shaped also the imaginary. And I don't really want to go into kind of the doctrine, but it has to do with things that you've always heard about when you study Zen. Hear Dharma talks. It's talking about the path of enlightenment, and a lot of it is about great enlightening beings and their practice, what that's like. The path to enlightenment, and a lot of it is about the interdependency of phenomena, and the interdependency of all phenomena. The fact that no phenomenon is discrete and isolated from anything else, dependent origination. It's arising in this moment in connection with everything else that's present here, that's ever existed or ever will exist. So interdependency of all phenomena is also the teaching of the emptiness of all things. So it's a profound investigation of form and emptiness, and how they are essentially come down to the same thing. Talks about the deeds of these great enlightening beings, and how their deeds carry merit and are essentially like flowers blossoming. Hence the image of the Flower Ornament Sutra, or Flower Garland Sutra. And if in fact as the philosophical teaching goes, if all phenomena are interdependent and empty, all phenomena are also Buddha. And the point of our practice is to look deeply and intimately at this teaching, not at a doctrinal in a doctrinal way, but in an experiential, existential way. That's what we're here to do. So the book is extraordinary to read. It's like being in a hall of mirrors. Some of you may remember from reading it. It's really hard to get any fixed point of perspective because all of a sudden it seems like there's doubling and tripling and quadrupling of worlds happening in any moment and from any place. And it's written in a way that it just opens up into endless dimensions. Endless worlds, universes, consciousnesses of Buddha. So it's commenting on the ultimately infinite nature of reality and of the Dharma, which is the expression of reality, of the truth. And it's showing how the consciousness of Buddha and great enlightening beings are permeating throughout all of these worlds and levels of reality and nooks and corners of reality. Buddha consciousness, the awakened mind of Buddha reaching, penetrating is beyond where we can imagine. And so the sutra in its unending length and in its endlessly complex representation of reality is reflecting reality itself. The sutra, in a way, is that reality. And when you step inside of it, it just all expands tremendously. We live in our daily little worlds with a sense of that things are very ordinary and limited, and then all of a sudden you step beyond this threshold of the Avatamsaka Sutra and universes upon universes. So a book is just a book. It's a finite thing, and yet it's trying to represent the infinite. Right? Whoever wrote this book was onto something very deep. They were pretty remarkable people. Whoever managed to put this, or the tradition that managed to produce it, was pretty remarkable. How can we capture the infinite within the finite? That's what this book does. But maybe in a way, it destabilizes our very notion of what a book is or what is finite. Because if we take seriously the teaching, the sutra is not finite and the book is not finite. Any more finite than the sound that we're hearing right now. Or our own lives. This book is really long. It was about somewhere in the middle, after reading hundreds and hundreds of these pages, that this dawned on me about what these guys were up to. And I wrote a little note. The Avatamsaka Sutra is a direct representation of the consciousness of Buddha, infinite in scope and all-encompassing. It goes on and on forever, endlessly reflecting the myriad dharmas, the myriad forms, like the Buddha mind itself. So, just to give you a little taste for this, this is sort of randomly selected. You could pick any other point in the book and it will, boom, open up the same way. But this is book 25. It's a chapter called The Ten Dedications. It's a chapter that alone is about over 160 pages. And this is how it begins. The enlightening being, Diamond Banner, that's his name, this enlightening being, empowered by the Buddha, entered absorption in the light of knowledge of enlightening beings. He entered absorption. So they're talking about a state of profound meditation. Maybe like yours tonight, I'm not sure how it was. He's in a state of, or she is in a state of profound absorption. When he or she had entered this absorption, there appeared before him as many Buddhas as atoms in 100,000 Buddha lands. From beyond as many worlds as atoms in 100,000 Buddha lands in each of the 10 directions. Did you get that? There appeared before him as many Buddhas as atoms, as many Buddhas as there are atoms in 100,000 Buddha lands, from beyond as many worlds as atoms in 100,000 Buddha lands in each of the 10 directions. Those Buddhas who were all alike named Diamond Banner, they were all Diamond Banner too, praised Diamond Banner, saying, "Good. Good man, it's very good that you can enter this absorption in the light of knowledge of enlightening beings. Good man, this is the spiritual power of Buddhas, as numerous as atoms in 100,000 Buddha lands in each of the 10 directions, bolstering you." Okay. So you can see, where are the limits of this? It escapes any kind of rational. You can break your head trying to figure out exactly what this is saying. So they go on and they praise him, Diamond Banner, and they talk about the virtue of his absorption in meditation. And they talk about how it allows him to expound the 10 dedications of enlightening beings. This power that he has, this spiritual power that comes from this absorption, allows him to expound the 10 dedications of enlightening beings. And then they say to him, "Child of Buddha, you should receive the spiritual power of the Buddha and expound this teaching." Okay? So he's already got the spiritual power, but they're saying you should receive it. And you should expound the Buddha's teaching. And then the Buddha's bestowed on Diamond Banner boundless knowledge and wisdom, as well as unhalting, unimpeded eloquence, skill in distinguishing expressions and meanings, unhindered light of the teaching, the equal body of wisdom of the enlightened, a pure voice with infinite distinct tones. They bestowed all of this upon him, the Buddhas did. Which is another way of saying that his profound absorption naturally bestowed upon his own awakened mind, bestowed upon him this boundless knowledge and wisdom and the ability to communicate it. Really, in a way, all this is saying, this is the natural fruit of your meditation, your true nature. And then the Buddhas each patted the enlightened being diamond banner on the head with their right hands. The Buddhas each patted diamond banner on the head with their right hands, after which diamond banner rose from absorption. And so he kind of comes out of it at that point. And he declares to the other enlightening beings, children of Buddhas, great enlightening beings have inconceivable great vows, filling the cosmos, able to save all sentient beings. That is, to learn and practice the dedications of all Buddhas of past, present, and future. Okay, so he comes forth after getting patted on his head, and he addresses all the great enlightened beings and says that all children of the Buddhas have these inconceivable great vows to save all sentient beings, to learn and practice the dedications of the Buddhas. So what's important here is a sense for the vows, and he's going to talk about the great dedications, which are dedicating his practice in a way. He's just come out of meditation, and he's now going to speak. He's going to teach, and he's going to teach about precisely what he's doing, which is to dedicate his practice and his awareness and his true nature to all sentient beings. And then he enumerates, there are 10 different kinds of dedication. And he says, what is the great enlightening being's dedication to saving all sentient beings? And he says, here the enlightened beings practice transcendent giving. They purify transcendent discipline. They cultivate transcendent forbearance. They arouse transcendent energy, enter transcendent meditation, abide in transcendent wisdom, great compassion, great kindness, great joy, great equanimity. Cultivating boundless roots of goodness such as these. Okay. So these are all, what is the dedication of enlightening beings to save sentient beings? It's all of these things. It consists of all of these things, he says. Giving, meditating, having forbearance, arousing your energy, abiding in your wisdom and your compassion, your natural kindness, joy, and equanimity. And this is all, he says, cultivating the roots of goodness. Cultivating the roots of goodness. So again, I think he's talking about here, goodness is something that arises naturally out of practice and out of meditation. And dedicating those roots, that goodness is itself the dedication of this absorption, of this awareness that comes out of practice, dedicating practice. So out of practice and enlightenment together, there is engagement in the world that manifests all of these wonderful qualities of enlightening beings. And then just to go a little bit into one of the 10 dedications, and again to give you a sense for what this whole discourse is like. This is the dedication, the sixth dedication, which is causing all roots of goodness to endure. Just as true thusness permeates all places without boundaries, so also does their dedication of roots of goodness pervade everywhere unbounded. Just as true thusness has reality as its essence, so likewise does their dedication of roots of goodness have as its essence understanding of the reality of all things. Just as true thusness always retains its original nature without change, so too does their dedication of roots of goodness preserve its original nature unchanging throughout. Just as true thusness has its nature has as its nature the essencelessness of all things, so also does their dedication of roots of goodness have as its nature the understanding of the essencelessness of all things. Okay, that's just to give you a taste, right? It goes on like that. This is only one sentence, what I just read you. And this one paragraph goes on for pages and pages. Okay, so it's really stating and restating endlessly the same thing over and over again. Where is the sound? Yes. Where are its limits? What do you hear right now? Where are the limits of that? So he's talking about reality. Thusness is permeating all places, has reality as its essence, retains its original nature without change. It has no essence. This is the nature of reality. And he's saying that the dedication of the roots of goodness is also based on an understanding and a realization of all of those qualities of that reality pervades everywhere and has no essence and retains its original nature without change. So this is it's extraordinary kind of expression, form of expression in this book. It comes out of an Indian metaphysical style, which is very grandiose and extraordinarily imaginative, and it's something that has informed our own tradition. And yet, it feels very different in ways from our own Zen style, which tends to be very down-to-earth and concrete. And, in Zen, we put a lot of emphasis on paying attention to just this detail, just the sound of the motor in the street, or just the crack in the floorboard, or the line, the wrinkle in the palm of your hand, but ultimately, I think though in Zen we're not so extravagant, in a way, this careful attention to the smallest and most ordinary detail is really the same thing as what's going on in the Avatamsaka Sutra. So Shakyamuni Buddha held up a flower on Mount Gudrakuta. What is it? What is its nature? What are its boundaries? And Sazan smiled. Mahakashyapa, a disciple of the Buddha, smiled at that. And everybody else there looked on blankly, like, why is he holding up a flower? This is strange. And yet, Shakyamuni Buddha, just in doing this, was saying in a very simple way what the Avatamsaka Sutra is saying in, you know, pages upon pages upon pages. In one of the koans that about this story of Shakyamuni Buddha, the comment says, or the poem says, a flower is held up and the secret has been revealed. That's a Zen way of saying what the Avatamsaka Sutra says in one little verse. It says what the Avatamsaka Sutra says in a very, very weighty tome. Another koan, a monk asks a teacher, what is the great meaning of Buddhism? And the teacher replies, what is the price of rice in Luling? Same thing. The Avatamsaka is responding to the question, what is the great meaning of Buddha, of Buddhism? And the answer is no different as the, what is the price of rice in Luling? What is the fiscal debate in Washington, D.C.? What is the Higgs boson? Coming back to our own experience, this is getting to the nub of it. What does the Avatamsaka Sutra have to do with your own life? What is going on for you right now? Can you see what is going on for you right now as what the Avatamsaka Sutra is pointing to? The interdependency of all phenomena. The essential emptiness of all phenomena. Maybe there's something in your life that is provokes a lot of anger, or maybe you're just feeling a lot of anger for whatever reason. What is that? What are the limits of that? The consciousness of Buddha that the Avatamsaka Sutra is saying that the consciousness of Buddha penetrates everywhere into every nook and cranny of your life, including the anger that you feel in a given moment. The consciousness of Buddha is permeating into the headache that you feel at the end of the day, or the sense of stress and falling behind in your work life. This is taking the Avatamsaka Sutra and grounding it and making it real for you. It's not easy to do. But I think, again, that's what our practice is about. So every detail counts, every moment counts. But appreciate those challenges and those difficulties and those points of suffering in particular as ones where this study of the unlimited nature of our lives can really transform our relationship to our life. To bring our own awareness as great enlightening beings to those particular points of difficulty and challenges is again, I think, the crux for us. So we can obsess about the other morning I woke up and I found myself furious about the situation in Washington. So can this awareness of the Buddha go even into these, you know, quite ordinary, quite unpleasant, quite frustrating elements of our life? To the sad aspects of our life, the missing of a dear friend who passed away. So what I think all of us might pay attention to here is to look at how we can dedicate our practice and allow it to expand throughout all of our lives in the most ordinary kinds of aspects of our experience. Allow our awareness to extend and to arise again and again and again infinitely. Allow it to penetrate our life over and over again as infinitely as our life itself is infinite. To bring that awareness to those points that we realize are points of suffering for us. And then go beyond that too and allow that awareness to carry over into all of those realms and dimensions and worlds that even go beyond what we're aware of. Thank you.